The following program has been furnished and paid for by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSCB and KGBC are not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that we may talk about certain topics that you most assuredly should check with your existing advisors that have more knowledge about your special facts and circumstances that may exist that would preclude us from talking to you without knowing a lot more. So you probably can get a faster set of answers back if you already have someone that knows all about you and your family's unique circumstances. I wanted to suggest that anyone that is seeking a relationship with a CPA firm that focuses on real estate private partnership syndications and understands the language, understands how to look at the myriad of documents that you'll have along your way to investing in those opportunities, by all means, go to our website at beaplanner.com, and if you'll go to the link at the top right or second from the right, the forms link, you'll see a step one, form one, client profile form. That would be the start point. You know, if you'd like to consider working with us, we need to understand what situation you find yourself in currently, whether you're already involved in some investor slash mentor programs, how long you've been in those programs, what your objectives are, what you're already invested in, that sort of thing. It's not hard, but it might take you 30 minutes to go through that and tell us more about your family members, because we tend to look at planning at the family level, since, you know, five or six tax brackets to work with is better than one or two, you and your spouse. So in any event, that's kind of the approach we at least try to take, and try to keep the overall family unit's taxes at the minimum possible level that we can. If you are interested in working with your retirement funds as you invest in real estate private partnership syndications, fill out Form 2, second step, as well, so we can see the retirement profile and understand how your money might be accessible, and we'll be happy to explain how that might work. So in any event, we have some good news to report about Houston. Houston has really, as of late, turned into a great multifamily opportunity. All the numbers are looking up for the most part, and this is for 2025 now, and I'll circle back momentarily and talk more about that. I'm going to give you some conflicting information, however. And, you know, it's like a lot of things that you see in the news. I've always thought when I would hear inflation news, the media didn't do a real great job of explaining the timeline, if you will, or the relative increase on inflation as opposed to the change from last month to this month. And I know even now it's rare that I see an article that will indicate that the current prices we're all paying for assorted goods and services is still 26%, I believe was the number I just saw, over some timeline just before COVID, maybe, or maybe just after. I think it was just before. And so, you know, when you hear talk about, well, you know, we've got inflation under control, well, that may mean that, you know, it's still not going up, although it is actually. It's not going up as fast as it did under the prior administration. But, you know, 26% from 5 years ago, maybe six, that's still a pretty big slide given what, you know, some things cost. I mean, you look at vehicles and other big ticket items, and it's crazy what things are going for now. But in any event, but Houston, when you look at, and I've got my market line report for Houston pulled up here. I'm going to have to make that a little bit bigger for my tired old eyes to see. But in any event, occupancy has climbed back to the 89.5% mark. And these numbers are about a month old, so it may be that it finally crossed the 90 mark. But compare that to Dallas at 89.1%, Houston 89.5%, so they're right there close. The average price is about $14.45 in Dallas. Houston's at $12.74, so the rate's not as high. And then you look at San Antonio, if you're comparing, and Austin. San Antonio is average occupancy is 87% at a rental price of $11.61, so it's less than Houston, and that's what we would typically expect. Dallas and Houston are more neck and neck. San Antonio will be lower, and then typically Austin will be as high or close to Houston and Dallas. And Austin, in fact, is let's see, it's 14.05, so it's a little bit under, slightly under Dallas, and a couple hundred dollars higher than Houston. But you know, there's other factors, and one thing that you got to look at in today's market is what are the concessions that are being paid out. And in Houston, it's, let's see, what percentage are we looking at overall? Well, I've got it broken down by class. Let me see, where's, thought we had a number here in total, but let's pick a submarket. Looking at one of the hotter markets, I guess, either downtown or maybe, well, FM 1960 East Intercontinental, I don't think I would call that a hot market. I can tell you that Dickinson and Galveston are one of the higher annualized growth percentage increases at 8.7%, trailing only Houston, or downtown rather, Houston, at 11.9%. And if you look at the concessions in those two areas, 7% for Dickinson, Galveston, downtown is actually a minus 9%. So I'm not sure how this data is calculated to give you a minus, almost like it makes it sound like somebody's or people are offering to pay more than the requested rent to live there. So, but again, downtown is not doing too badly. Of course, it's also 140,000 units that have concessions downtown. Man, that's, you know, who would think if you backed up, certainly in my ute, you know, when I was coming out of U of H back in 1983, second degree, my MBA, or actually as a graduate tax degree, we called it an MBA, but I was fortunate to be given some special consideration on that program. But 140,000 units downtown, if that's what you told me we would have, I'd say good luck. You know, there was no such thing. I mean, the closest apartment units of any consequence are out Allen Parkway. You know, I remember the Allen House was out there and some other projects, which I don't even know if they're still there. I hadn't been down Allen Parkway in so long, but it wouldn't surprise me. I know the last time I was in that general area, there were new apartment projects all over the area, Allen Parkway and south, I guess, if I got the directions right, back towards, I can't even think of the name of the street, but it comes across from downtown going over to Shepherd. There's a couple of them there, and they used to have fields there, just plain land, and now they've all got these nice grade A Camden type apartments. I don't know if Camden's one of the developers, probably is, and you know, they are doing pretty well with actually keeping the absorption numbers moving higher. Let's see, there was another stat that I wanted. Oh, yeah, the pipeline. The total operating supply in Houston is roughly not quite 800,000 units, 782,900 or so apartment units. The units absorbed through 2025 are 22,618. That's a pretty healthy number. The units under construction are not enough, and I know you've heard that many times before, 8,515, and let's see, units proposed for construction. Okay, this is showing some life now, 37,981. That said, proposed is different than under construction. The units recently opened, 21,054, which is still light, supposedly, for what's needed. I've got an article I'm going to talk about in a minute here that gives some more details on Houston employment and the significant growth that we're seeing. And, you know, folks, this is rather remarkable. I mean, it hadn't been a year and a half ago that Houston was, you know, declining rapidly on all fronts, and it's an amazingly resilient market, all things considered. And why are we talking about this? I mean, do I expect my clients are for the most part going to go out and purchase these new Class A units that are being developed to put on the ground in the immediate future? No, not really. But everything moves downhill in this type of market, and you'll find the new units are going to have higher rates typically. So there'll be some tenants that will no longer afford the A units that'll be looking for the A minus, B plus, maybe B's in the right locations. And then there's going to be higher prices because of that demand moving down to the B's. There's going to be higher rent rates proposed, which is going to cause certain folks that are tenants in those B properties to start looking down to maybe a C plus, or again, a strong C that's got other intangibles like location. Location is huge in certain sections of Houston. But in any event, let's take a short break here. I'll circle back in a few minutes, and I will have the Houston article that I wanted to go over here up on the screen. We'll be back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I've got a couple articles that talk about the Houston apartment market and where it's headed here. I mean, we're already over half, or we're past the halfway point in the year. But let's take a look here. Let me go back up here to the beginning. Houston's apartment market is poised for a rebound in 2025, anticipating strong rent growth and job gains driving housing absorption. And for any of you that are already invested in multifamily, you know that rent growth is what we all strive for on these properties that we've invested in. And why is that? Well, the way we make money in multifamily, I mean, other than the obvious, the way we make money in multifamily, it's not like a single family rental property. You know, a single family property, just real quick here, you make money by the overall area increasing in the amount per square foot that houses sell for. So, you know, you might have a rental property in a certain neighborhood in any town in America, and I don't care which town it is, in most cases, you're capped at a maximum sales price of what your neighbor or neighbors sold their property for last month or last year, depending on how active the market is. And so no matter how much nicer, and I mean, I'm not saying there's not exceptions. I mean, obviously, if maybe your home has a swimming pool and another one they're looking at doesn't, the comp would reflect that. But what I'm trying to say is that no matter how nice you run your rental property as a manager, you're not going to be able to sell it for twice what your neighbor did. You know, and I'm talking per square foot now. Obviously, if it's a home that's two times or three times the size of the comp, then, yeah, you might get two or three times what that home sold for. But that's why we focus on price per square foot. That is the common delineator between real estate and even genres of real estate. You can tell relative value oftentimes by the price per square foot or the appraised value per square foot. And so, again, single family, you've got to have a comp that supports your appraised value in most cases. Now, again, there's exceptions. And, you know, if you've got a unique product, a lot of times your price will be higher than you'll be helping other people that come behind you and sell their property because you may, in fact, be able to sell for a higher per square foot. And that may impact that average value that would apply to that neighborhood. And you'll notice even HAR, as an example, Houston Area Realtors, I believe, is what that stands for. All their listings now, they show the price per foot. And I don't recall when that started, but it wasn't 30 years ago. I can promise you that because we always had to calculate it. And I remember learning as a young CPA and someone that was interested in real estate and heard old-timers talk about real estate. I remember hearing Jerry J. Moore at a luncheon one day, which he didn't do many luncheons. I think I've told this story before. He was buddies with Racehorse Haynes, the criminal defense lawyer, and Racehorse Haynes was active in the Northwest Chamber of Commerce. And as a young CPA, when I left Arthur Anderson, we had a buddy of mine and I had started a practice, and we were office there in the Brook Hollow area. And the Northwest Chamber of Commerce met for their luncheons right there at the Marriott that was part of that development. And I remember my banker there invited me to go to that luncheon. He said, look, Jerry J. Moore never talks at events like this. You really ought to consider coming so you can hear something that will be beneficial. And it really was. But the couple takeaways that luncheon, Moore was, I think at that time, I'm pretty sure he was on the Forbes 400 list. He was very well known for developing shopping centers around Houston and I believe Dallas and some other cities. And you always could tell a property that was a Jerry J. Moore property because he had all the light posts painted yellow at the base going up far enough where if you were backing into a parking place or even pulling in straight ahead, you could see where that pole was. Just, he was a common sense, salt of the earth kind of guy. And in any event, he said two things that stuck with me. He said he never considered himself to be that smart compared to his competition. So he said, I would go into the office. I think he said he got in at 5 every day. He said, I figured if I got a 3-hour heads up on everybody else, then maybe I'd be far enough ahead they couldn't catch me, you know, during the day, which he must have been right on that front because he sure owned a lot of real estate. And in any event, but the other thing he said, and this was something I'd already started thinking this way. I had a real estate broker along the way that represented us on office leasing, and he had started getting me to think this way, is always convert whatever space you're looking at, whether it's a home, an office, or whatever, to a price per square foot, because that is your comparative yardstick to the quality of certain real estate assets. Indirectly or directly, the price per foot is going to hash out the value of that real estate if you're comparing to other real estate. And for sure, that's true in the office market. You know, the price per square foot of space you're going to lease for an office, or if you're buying an office building. And it's certainly true for the residential market. You might argue that it's not as appropriate in the multifamily space because, you know, there's so many other factors that come to play in terms of the age and the overall location, the types of utilities that you have, the condition of long-term assets like roofs and parking lots. I don't know that I would say it's exactly as useful a measure as in an office lease or a residential home. On the other hand, it's still in the arena. I mean, it's still something that would give a hint as to value. But in any event, okay, so back to the Houston apartment market rebound. Let's see, I was just talking about we have strong rent growth and job gains that are driving housing absorptions. While construction has moderated from previous levels, the market's well positioned for recovery due to the city's strong job market. In Q1 2025, Houston's average multifamily cap rate decreased to 5.9%. And just for those of you that are uninitiated into the multifamily lingo, the cap rate is the rate that an investor or a lender would seek if they were going to underwrite a purchase or maybe a refinance. And so it's decreased from I forget what it got up to. I want to say it was 6.5, maybe as high as 7 in some cases. The value of the property goes down as the cap rate goes up. Cap rates come down, the value goes up. And so I think I said that right. The cap rate, let me shut my phones off. As the cap rate goes up, the value goes down. As the cap rate goes down, the value goes up. And you can think about it in the context of a treasury bill, a T-bill. You know, if you owned a bond or a T-bill, you could sell it for more if the cap rates overall applied to that market. In other words, the amount that an investor demands, you know, if you've got a lower cap rate, the value of that treasury bond is higher. So, you know, again, think about it in apartments. If the multifamily cap rate has come down from 6.5, let's say, and I know there were transactions at that level. I don't know if it was most of them, and some of them were obviously higher. But if the rates decrease to 5.9%, that means the property doesn't have to sell as much for that investor or that lender to be pleased with the return that they're going to get. Whereas if the investor's demanding 6.5 or 7, then that property can't sell for as much money. In any event, there's, you know, the multifamily markets had probably one of the bigger cap rate decreases amongst the asset classes, so that's a positive if you're still hanging in as a multifamily owner and you're thinking, you know, you may want to ride out another year or so to see if cap rates come down further. It's going to be interesting to see, even though the interest rate decrease that the Fed just put in place, they just cut the rate a quarter, I believe, of 1%, if I read that right, earlier this week. And I know that doesn't sound like much of a rate cut, but a lot of transactions are purchased or sold by forward-looking parties. And let's just say it's better for it to just gone down by a quarter of a percent than having gone up. And it seems like there's a lot of excitement on those decreased cap rates. Key trends for 2025, rent growth and job gains. Houston is expected to be a leader in Sun Belt rent growth in 2025, fueled by rapid job gains and strong housing absorption. Decreased cap rates in the quarter, I'm kind of repeating some of the info they had at the outset here. Houston's multifamily average cap rate decreased to 5.9%. That's a positive sign for the market. I agree. We'd love to see it come on down further. Moderate construction levels. Construction has shifted to more moderate levels, which can contribute to a healthier balance between supply and demand. There's strong investor interest now in Houston. A lower average cap rate suggests that investors are finding Houston's multifamily market attractive. Now, here's some of the factors that are influencing the performance. Strong economy. The city's strong economy and job growth are major drivers of demand in the apartment market. And housing absorption, a robust economy leads to better absorption of new housing. And let's see, indicating a healthy market. Controlled supply, the shift from aggressive construction to more moderate building. I mean, we had an overbuilt situation, there's no question. Until, you know, this year, actually, or I guess late 2024. And so, you know, as the construction has slowed, it gives time for the absorption to become more in equilibrium with the supply and demand elements. In summary, Houston's apartment market is set for a strong year in 2025, with key indicators pointing towards increased rent growth, improved absorption, and sustained investor interest, according to both LeaseLock and Colliers white paper companies. Let's see if there's any additional points worth highlighting. Well, let's see. They're just pointing out on some follow-up points that, you know, the occupancy rate in April, as an example, was 92.6. I think that's a typo. I think it may have been 82.6 because it improved to 89%. That was in April. By June. I think that's a typo. I don't remember it's being in the 90-plus percentile in quite a while. Let's see. What else do I want to get to here before we break again? You know, there's a couple of sites that you may, if you're contemplating investing, and I know we talk about multifamily as if, you know, it's the best niche in the multifamily investment space, and you know, we happen to have you know, a lot of clients invested in Texas, mainly Houston, Dallas, some San Antonio. But take a look at what some of these market reports. Colliers has one, and you know, I'm trying to think. There was another one that we like. Oh, Multi Housing News has one. These are all, I don't think I've got a paywall that I'm dealing with. I think those are free for the taking. But, you know, what I would say, it would help you as you talk to potential deal sponsors or lead partners to know when maybe they're blowing smoke, you know, on their pro forma information. And, you know, the pro forma information is not a guarantee. I mean, I believe most people understand that. If you didn't and you invested 2 to 3 years ago, I believe you understand that now. I mean, you know, the syndicator is telling you what their plan is, what they think is going to happen, but people are wrong. And in the recent past, I think there were more than a few. There were a lot of syndicators that may have realized, well, the rates are going to go up, and they took out a rate lock on the mortgage level, but they didn't anticipate that the Fed would raise the rate 11 times between, I guess, late 22, I believe. Maybe it was early 23, but certainly up through 2024 at some point, 11 times. And so there were many syndicators, some good folks, that just didn't have enough rate lock in place. That's like insurance to cover, you know, anticipated but unknown interest rate increases. But, you know, it's got its limits, and you pay more to get more coverage going up. And unfortunately, a lot of folks blew through the rate lock level, and they just didn't have the money, had to give the property back or was foreclosed on. But anyway, I wanted to mention a point because you hear in the news a lot the concept of affordability. Relative affordability in Houston's case, despite the rent stability of Houston, Houston remains a relatively affordable option for renters compared to other U.S. metros. By early 2025, Houston ranked as the second most affordable city for renters by one of the white paper companies. I forget now which one it was, but it got on at least one group's radar. However, it takes significantly more income, and this is something that some of the affordability stats don't quite gestate properly. Even though Houston may be relatively more affordable than some other metros, it doesn't change the absolute amount of the money it takes to make the rent. So the however is it takes significantly more income to afford rent in 2025 compared to 5 years ago. I guess right at the onset of COVID. So, you know, it's I don't want to say it's a mixed bag because, you know, where are you going to live? If you want to live in a city like Houston, Houston is relatively the most affordable option of most big metros. When you look at affordability versus income, while Houston is affordable relative to other cities, Houstonians need to earn about 23% more income in early 2025 compared to 5 years ago, prior to 5 years prior, I'm sorry, to comfortably afford rent. It's a pretty big jump. And so, again, remember what I said a few minutes ago, there's going to be a movement going down the food chain in the multifamily. The Class A folks, a lot of them will move out to Class B and Class B to Class C, et cetera. But, you know, in Houston, it's interesting, and I guess this is starting that push. The occupancy of luxury 4- and 5-star units, and not just in Houston, but nationwide, rose so far this year. So anyway, looking forward, and this is where, again, if you're sitting on the sideline looking to invest, you may be running out of runway if you want to try to get into a project that has some upward value possibilities. The shift to undersupply, the sharp reduction or the sharp slowdown in new construction starts is a key factor that will influence future performance. While Houston had a surplus of new units in 2025, Fannie Mae forecast a shortage of over 5,800 units by 2026. So we were talking earlier about there not being enough new units in the construction proposal pipeline. That's what we were referring to. Investor caution is another factor looking forward. In the first half of 2025, higher interest rates kept multifamily transaction activities subdued. While investment interest remains, moderate activity is anticipated for the rest of the year. So it's good timing to snag new tenants when the market supply is as low as it appears it's going to be. Let's do this. We've only got just a few minutes left. Let's go ahead and take our last break quickly, and we'll circle back here momentarily with the final segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me away, I want to be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like me. With big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we've just got a few minutes left here. But, you know, I mentioned earlier, I think I've kind of shared with you why I think 2025 is going to be a good year, at least for our part of the country, the Sun Belt. I think with the exception of maybe San Antonio, Dallas and I think even Austin's actually showing signs of having turned a corner, although, again, there's significant concessions that are being made. But now's the time. I mean, if you're thinking of getting involved at all, now would be the time I would suggest to put a hook in the pond. I mean, certainly don't invest all your money, but, you know, a certain amount for you to test and understand how this particular investing segment works. You know, the issue really for you to try to get a grip on is whether you would try to do this on your own, or whether you may want to join any one of a number of investor / mentor platforms. I've been parts of several of those platforms. Happy to consult with anybody that's got questions about the relative merits. I definitely, in case you haven't noticed from prior shows, I've been doing this show now for almost 4 years. It's hard to believe. But yeah, I've got an opinion or two that I can share as to where you might spend your money and what you might expect to get for it. There's good and bad. And most of the programs, there's a couple that are devoid of value altogether, and I would urge you to run, not walk, in another direction. But bottom line is there are multiple ways and options for you to get onto the playing field, and you shouldn't fall for any of the, well, you got to do it today, or we're having a special today. All these platforms, the mentor / investor platforms, all have that messaging. And, you know, there's no need to panic. There's no need to rush in where fools fear to tread. And there's no reason to believe everything you hear hook, line, and sinker. And especially when it comes to things that you're being told you should do that have a significant tax cost involved. And I've listened the last 20 plus years of my career, I've been involved in consulting and investing in multifamily assets. And, you know, you learn a lot. It's not that big of a community. You learn a lot about people, and you understand, you know, everyone has made some mistakes along the way. I mentioned the debt slump and the high interest rate clicks that we had on the Fed raising the rates. And, you know, I don't know that there's any syndicator out there that has not had some issues, but that's, you know, not something you want to solely let be your focus. You really want to look at, well, how did they react? What did they do to try to mitigate the turmoil that was coming? Did they claw back any of their compensation that they took out? If it was a deal that involved upfront or day of closing, I call it day zero of the transaction, when, you know, the current mindset amongst many syndicators is that they deserve some kind of compensation for having put the deal together. And they talk about the overhead that they've maintained, et cetera. I don't buy it. I would tell you that, look, a successful syndicator deserves a healthy chunk of the profit, but they don't deserve it ahead of you getting what you were told the pro forma projection might be. And in terms of, you know, why you signed up in the first place. What was the equity multiple that was mentioned? What was the IRR? What was the average annual return? I mean, these are things that, you know, let's face it, if you've got a choice between a dud and a booming, successful transaction, you're going to avoid the duds. And, you know, when I see what's happened, it's not just over the last couple of years. This happened back in the mid-2000s, 2006, 7, 8, that time frame, we had the debt malaise. We've had other periods of challenge. And, you know, it's just all too easy for the syndicators to request the money up front as if they've done something by simply finding the deal, raising the capital either through the debt financing that they determined or found available, or raise capital from folks like you as a passive investor. And, you know, we want to be passive. Who among us wants to go locate the property, do the due diligence on the property, excuse me, have to go get the loan, which, excuse me, which in some cases involves some debt guarantees, which as a passive you will never, ever do, or I would tell you not to do it. Never told a client to sign a personal guarantee. I think you should turn and walk the other way. If the syndicator doesn't have the balance sheet to undertake those types of transactions, you need a different syndicator, or they need to arrange for a partner that's joining them to have a balance sheet that's not passive, perhaps, that's getting compensated for it. But, you know, the syndication game is fraught with pitfalls, and yet there are good transactions. It doesn't necessarily mean that the last syndicator you worked with that was good or bad will be good or bad again. But that's why you have to understand the documents you're looking at, the pro forma projections, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we're at the end of the show. I want to encourage you to tune in again next Friday. We've also got a show on Sunday at 7 a.m. on the 700 a.m. station, as well as 1540, the newest entry into KSEV's family. And we hope you enjoyed today, and we thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.